Hi, and thank you for joining us for this episode of the Kingdom Lives Podcast. Today we bring another testimony to you, this one from Jonathan, co-founder of Kingdom Lives. Jonathan shares his story of how he and his wife lost their first child in a stillbirth at 38 weeks and 6 days. His story details how he dealt with the loss of their child and how this led him into a spiral of taking baby steps into a territory that is often portrayed as unacceptable in a marriage. Jonathan breaks down his process and how this all came to light and revealed how broken their marriage was and how this led them to seek something else in a church. What they found was God staring back at them and the whirlwind of salvation and fellowship found in Christ. Watch this amazing testimony and share this with anyone who may be struggling with loss or brokenness. God bless.
So, for me, part of my story to how I came to Jesus Christ and how my wife and I and my family found ourselves here at LifePoint starts back in 2015 when we were trying to have our first child. And, we went to a doctor's appointment because my wife was a little concerned. She was 38 weeks and 6 days. And we went to the doctor and they let us know that we'd lost the baby, and so we had to go through that process of, it's a process that a lot of people don't put a lot of thought into, but you still have to have that baby. And so we did that, and that was a very destructive part of our life. It really tore a lot of things down, and I went home to get stuff for our hospital stay, and I got into our home back in Colorado and I fell on the floor and I screamed, and I didn't know at that time who I was screaming at. We weren't Christians, we weren't going to church. We had a pretty specific view of Christianity, and a lot of the experiences we'd had growing up had always kept us away from it. And so I went home and I cleaned up the house, so to speak. That's involving, putting things away. We had the whole house ready to receive a baby, and I didn't want my wife to come home to all of that, so I put a lot of things away so that our home would be more like it was before we set up the nursery and before we set everything up. And I went back to the hospital, and we came back home once everything was completed, and we were both broken, and we were sitting at home. And, I took a week off work and then wound up going back to work and trying to get through that, and that was very difficult. And my wife's story is very similar, but obviously from her perspective, she had to sit at home every day, and while I'm at work, and she had to sit in a quiet home. And you don't realize how much a quiet home when it's not supposed to be quiet, or a clean home when it's not supposed to be clean, and no babies crawling around and spitting up and doing all these things that you take for granted, and they become highlighted in that situation. So my wife and I decided that we could deal with this. We could have a little meeting a couple times a week and touch base and make sure that we're processing and moving forward and not getting stuck, not allowing ourselves to dwell in those dark places. And all that while, we're still, don't have any faith. We're not going to church, we're not calling out to God, we're not praying, we're not doing any of that. And so we started processing a little different, and in my process of dealing with that, I decided I should make sure that I'm good so that I can be there for my wife. And that involved me, I started smoking on the side to deal with the stress. And to me, I had to go I could have a cigarette, and that would kind of relieve the stress. That would sort of reset my emotions. That would make it to where I could continue to function at work when certain things would be triggers to what I was going through. And so before I knew it, I was, you know, smoking, and I was lying to my wife about it because I figured that would be more stress on her to try to think that it was her fault. And, you know, I was really trying to help her combat the idea that any of it was her fault, that this was just a part of life. It was a risk. It was a thing that happens. And so then I started smoking pot again, and I did that on the side, and I wasn't telling her about that. And so, you know, 6 or 8 months after this whole ordeal, I found myself having this entire lifestyle on the side that was what I was justifying as me doing what I needed to do to make sure that I could be a pillar for her. And in order for me to be that pillar, I had to mask all the other parts of me that were broken. And that's how I was doing it. So that went on for, you know, about a year. And then in April of 2017, we gave birth to our second boy. So our first son was Jameson. Our second boy was Jetson. And he was a light in our world. It was, there was nothing like what we were feeling when we had him, and it was amazing. And the problem is, I had already set up all these other habits for how I was dealing with things, and I wasn't able to just get rid of them. So now we had this new baby, and I'm still off to the side doing these things that I shouldn't be doing, and lying to my wife about it, and pretending like it's no big deal, and that I'm this solid rock for her. And that slipped into allowing other things to creep into my life that I'm not proud of. There was, you know, a lot of stuff with, you know, pornography, and just this whole section of my life, it had just festered and become its own thing. And it all came to a head because my wife had, she had looked in my email to check on an order that we had from Amazon, and in the email there was a few emails that were a result of some of the things I was doing on the internet, and those are right in line with, like, the pornography and just me not being a good person. And she confronted me about it, and I got really defensive, but I didn't have any defense because it was wrong what I was doing. And about 3 days later, she was doing my laundry, and she found some receipts in my pocket that were for some pot that I had purchased because I was smoking pot on the side. And and it was Colorado, so you could just go to the store and get it. So there were receipts for it, and, you know, so she confronted me about that. And then I kind of am realizing that, you know, I'm falling apart, and we've got this little baby. And so then we really had a really hard discussion about, you know, our marriage and where we were going to be and where we're going and what's this going to look like. And I had always prided myself on having a good amount of integrity, and she really pointed out that everything I was doing was showing the opposite of that, that what I was doing was a complete lack of integrity, and I was just presenting a shell to her. And so in the middle of that, I also mentioned to her that, you know, like, I'd been smoking cigarettes at that point too, and she had been under the impression that I hadn't been smoking in years. And so all these things kind of came out within a couple, probably less than 2 weeks, they all came out together. And I realized that this solid marriage, we had dealt with all these struggles together, was not as solid as I thought it was. There were more cracks in it than I thought there were. And I was very sure that I was the one that put those cracks there. And so it got to a point to where, you know, there wasn't a lot of trust on my part. I had to tell her the ways that I was sneaking everything. I had to tell her the ways that I was covering up the smell of the cigarettes, the way I was covering up the fact that I was high when I was getting home. I had to tell her the ways that I was, like, looking at pornography, and the ways that I was doing everything, so that she could tell if I was doing it again. because I had built these avenues for me to do it without her knowing. And if I didn't tell her those avenues, I could continue to do it and just tell her I wasn't exactly the same as before. And I was really concerned I would do that. So I told her all of that, and she was very deeply hurt at how much I had lied to her over the last year. And so I was sitting there and I was contemplating, and I started having these notions of God in my mind. And I've looked into Christianity before. I've read the Bible before, and it's just never been something that was anything I wanted to be a part of because of the experiences we'd had. We'd seen a lot of, hypocrisy. We'd seen a lot of people that were judgmental when they were telling you they weren't, and they would push you out of church because of how you looked or how you smelled or how you spoke. And this time it felt a little different, and I was sitting there thinking about it, and Jamie comes out of the bedroom and she says, "Would you try with me to maybe see if we could find anything at a church?" And I knew she was going to say that, the third word into that sentence. And before she could finish saying it, I said I would go. And so what we did is we got a list of all the churches around where we lived, and we figured we'd start at the church that was closest to our house and just work out until we either found something or we didn't find something. And so we went to the first church that's right by our house. It was a couple blocks away, and it was called Journey Christian Church. It was a non-denominational church, and we walked in on Sunday. We checked Jetson into the nursery area. No, we didn't do that. He was still too little to be checked in. So we took him and went in, and they were in the middle of worship, and the song Oceans was playing, and I just fell apart. And I had, I'd never had an experience like that before. And I look over and Jamie's crying and I'm crying, and we get done with the worship, and then the pastor comes out and he starts speaking, and it was as if he was speaking directly to me. You could have removed everybody from that congregation and he wouldn't have had to change his message at all. It was specifically geared to me, and it blew my mind. And his name was Pastor Aaron, and he's still what I consider one of the people that helped bring me and my wife to Christ. And so we came back the next Sunday. And in the meantime, I told my wife, if we're going to keep doing this, I have two rules based on my previous experiences. One is we're only going to go if we can find fellowship with other people. Because we were thinking that the only real thing that you can't get from church is fellowship. And not the only thing that you can't get from church. The only thing you can't supplement with online materials and reading the Bible and doing online sermons and getting all of this teaching from another source, you can't get fellowship that way. You can get messages, you can get revelation, you can get inspiration, but you can't get relationships with other people who are trying to find and get closer to Christ. You can't do that through the internet. And so that was one rule, is that we have to find some sort of fellowship. And I just said fellowship because I didn't know anything about small groups or home groups or fellowship groups or any of this. I just knew that fellowship, brotherhood with other Christians. And the other rule is that we are not going to tithe. That was our bigger one. I'd always had this little joke in my mind about tithing, and my wife agreed. And so we go the next Sunday, and that was the beginning of their 90-day tithe challenge, where for the next 90 days they were going to do sermons and messages on tithing. And the message he put out was very humble for the church. He showed us all their books. He showed us all their debt obligations. And he fell apart on the stage, and he got emotional, and he was crying about how serious it is, and he really got the idea of tithing as an act of faith more than an expense. That if you do this act of faith, then it allows God to know that you're acting in faith, and he was much more eloquent in the way that he got that across to us. But it changed my mind on the very first Sunday that I was gonna not ever tithe, and so that changed our mind. So then we decided we were gonna start tithing. And then after that service, we're sitting there, and my wife and I were talking, and we were saying that, for a church that's all about fellowship, nobody has come up and talked to us, and nobody has come up and asked us how we're doing and what we're doing here, and that we're a new face, and no one's introduced themselves. And me and my wife are discussing it, and then, like, out of nowhere, I get these words that I'm sitting here saying that, and I am also not introducing myself to anybody. I'm not walking up and saying I'm new here. I'm not reaching out to them, and I'm expecting them to reach out to me, and it really showed me that I can't do that. So that same moment, I walked up to somebody, and I said, "Hey, how are you doing? This is, the second time I've been here, and we're new in our faith." And they introduced us, and they showed us where to sign up for small groups, and so we did, and we wound up signing up for two of them, and that was really helpful. And about 2 weeks later, we signed up to get baptized at that church, and so we did it, and the pastor told us when we got baptized, he said, it's amazing that you're giving yourself to God, and it's something, there is a celebration in heaven. There's a celebration here in the congregation, and it's through the whole universe. It's being celebrated that you're making this choice right now. But know this, that by baptizing yourself, you're becoming a dedicated enemy to Satan, and that he will now put a target on your back, and you're going to start to see these trials and struggles, and these are not anything to be afraid of because you have God on your side. But be aware of them. And then he baptized us, and we got out. So at this point, we're sold. We're fully Christians in our faith. We're following Jesus Christ. We accepted him into our heart. And we're seeing the way that this is completely reshaping our view of the world. It's completely changing how we see other people. It's changing how our hearts feel towards other people. We're starting to read the Bible. We're reading it from a perspective of having a new heart rather than the cynical perspective that I had read it from before. And we're finding all these revelations, and about 3 weeks later, my wife woke me up at about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. She was, feeding Jetson, and she wakes me up and she says, "Babe, I think we have to move to Arizona." And her parents lived out here, so we had some reasons we could move out here, but we had both always vetoed moving to Arizona because it's really hot, and that's really the only real reason, is that it's really hot. So we were discussing it, and what had happened is she had a dream, and in that dream we were preparing to move to Arizona, and we had all these reasons for why we should move, and then we had the big reason that it was too hot. And in the dream, she had the process worked out of how we were going to list the house, how much we were going to get for it, where we were going to move, how we were going to get the house in Arizona, and the way our finances would work, and the way the jobs would work. And it was very convincing to her, and when she woke up, it was just a slap in the face that I can show you all of this and you're not going to go because it's hot. So we decided to swallow our pride on that, and we started preparing to move. And I immediately landed a job out here that was paying more than I was getting paid in Colorado. And mind you, this is all within 3 weeks of us starting to tithe and actually tithe our 10%. And they were showing testimonies at that church about people who made that commitment and how that really changed their circumstances in life. And so we were making that commitment, and we did. And then, she has this dream and it has this plan, and we follow the plan. We list our condo. We sell it within about 4 hours of it getting on the market. It sold for higher than any condo had ever sold in that complex to that time. We got enough profit there to roll it into a house here and pay for all the moving expenses and give us a little nest egg. I landed the job that was paying more, and we get out here and wind up in a house that is nowhere near where we plan to move. But it's big enough for our family, it's big enough for us to grow into, and we had enough down payment so that we could support ourselves in that house without us working ourselves to death. And we were just amazed at how much provision there was laid out, not only in the dream, but in the whole process. That there were several times it brought us both to our knees, and we were just on the ground thanking God and praying for God just to keep his hands on us, because we both felt like we were huge hypocrites. We felt like we had lived our whole life. And, you know, you hear a story about like the prodigal son, how he just took everything he had and he wasted it, and he comes back and he's remorseful because he knows what he did and he's not proud of himself. He doesn't come back with pride. He comes back broken. And we both kind of identified as that. That's what we're doing, is we're coming to Christ, and we have squandered so much of our life. And right after we moved here, Jamie had a miscarriage, and we were able to see the contrast in that miscarriage with how much we were surrounded by our community and the people who loved us that were in the church, both in Colorado and here. And it showed us that we could have had that in our first loss, and we could have had that support, and instead we were alone and in the dark. And you know, all these things just kept happening that were showing us how much we had been missing out on by trying to live our life in our own pride and in our own methods of dealing with everything. You know, we're all pretty sure that we know how to live life to the best, and the reality is we don't. And I didn't, and I thought I did, and it wasn't until I let go of the steering wheel of our life, I let go of everything, and I laid it all down to Jesus Christ, and I gave it all away. And I really committed everything to him, so that if there was something he needed to take or needed me to give, it was there. And it's completely changed our life. It's changed our life in so many different ways that I don't think you would recognize who I was 2.5 years ago. And probably the same for my wife. And now that we were in our house, we started checking out churches here, and LifePoint was the third church we tried, but it was also the one that was the closest to our house by far. We were using reviews on the internet to determine which church we should try out, when we should have probably done the same method we did in Colorado and just go to the closest one to our house first. And we landed here at LifePoint, and since then God has just been giving provision to us in so many different ways, and answering our prayers in so many different ways, and showing us clarity in situations that we maybe weren't sure where he was. In our loss, when we lost Jameson, my grandma, who has always been a devout Catholic, her response to me when I told her that we had lost him was one that is very hard to hear, but she said, "Well, God does everything for a reason." And that made me really angry. But it never left my mind, and it's one of those things that I don't think is very helpful to tell somebody when they're in the middle of trauma or something like that, to, you know, and they have a major loss in their life. And I know our trauma is not the same as everybody else's, and they're not to be compared, and, you know, someone's loss is their loss. And but to tell someone that God's got a plan for that, God took them for a reason, can be very hurtful, and it was to me. It made me very resentful to talking to her, because I thought, how pretentious is it to say something like that? And 2 years later, when I'm in my faith and I'm looking at it and I'm talking to my wife about it, and we came to the conclusion that, you know, we have to find a way to reconcile the idea that God did have a reason for taking him. And we came to this conclusion that that started a process that led us to him. But it led us through some harder times and some struggles, and it caused some cracks, and it made us get ourselves into a position that we had to rely on him in order to repair it. And through that process, we were able to see that by us losing Jameson, or by God taking Jameson, he landed an entire lineage, an entire bloodline that's going to be committed to him. And as hard as it is for me to say that that was a good thing, I can't imagine where my life would be had that not happened. And I can't imagine where I would have found the amount of joy that I've found if that wouldn't have happened. And that's been one of the most difficult things for me to reconcile in my life, is to find joy in something that is traumatic like that. And to find joy in the fact that my sons now have all been committed to Christ. But my whole family is committed to Christ. And everything I do is committed to Christ. And the cost was on my end, but it was also his cost. And I know that God felt that pain with me, and that God was in sorrow with me. But the amount of joy that I can find in the fact that my sons are going to grow up in the Lord, and that I'm going to die in the Lord, and that my wife is going to grow old in the Lord, is so much more comforting than any other type of thing I could have used to try to fill the hole that was there after we lost Jameson. And since then, it's been an amazing journey for my wife and I. We started plugging in and serving in all the ways that we can, and tithing in the ways that we can, and just trying to answer the calls that God puts out for us. And I mean, that's about my whole story to how I got to LifePoint and how I got to where I am now. And it's through being broken, and through being beat down by the circumstances that plague us all in this broken world. You know, we're in a broken world, and broken things are going to happen to us. They're going to happen to our family. And these things leave you broken. There are certain things that happen that leave you broken, and there's no way that you can fix it. There's no way that you can resolve the problem that happens whenever you lose somebody. You can't unlose somebody. And being able to put that faith in Christ, that it's not broken, and that this world isn't all there is, and that losing somebody in this world is not losing somebody. It's just a time apart from them. And to know that they're going to be somebody that you reconnect with, and that you get to reestablish your relationship with in heaven, and to know that there's more to all of this, has been the only thing that has filled in these holes that were in our life. And it's been the only things that have put us in a position that made us feel like we were whole again. And I don't know if this testimony is helpful to anybody. I don't know if it touches home with anybody. But my heart now says that there are people that are struggling in a lot of the same ways that I did. And there are people that are scared of looking like a hypocrite, or looking like they've done things in their life that have barred them from the love of Jesus Christ. And there are things that you have done that are not excusable. And I don't believe any of that is true. And I thought that about myself too. And it wasn't until I let go of that that I saw that there is nothing but real love that comes from Jesus Christ and healing. And I'm just excited to see where God leads us in our life now that we are letting God lead us in our life.
Thank you again for joining us for this episode of the Kingdom Lives podcast. We hope you enjoyed Jonathan's testimony and it helps lead you closer to God. You can keep up to date with us at www.kingdomlives.com and also across all social media platforms at Kingdom Lives. You can find those links on our website. Thank you again for joining us. Have a great day and God bless.